turning lawns into gardens, empty lots into farm fields, and parks into edible landscapes. The idea of urban gardening can take on many different forms. Today, what it might mean in Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'll talk with Tim McCullough, a project manager for Milwaukee's Homegrown Initiative. It's taking vacant lots all over that city and turning them into green spaces and free orchards. I'll also talk with Ron Lenth of the Waverly Sharing Garden. And later in the hour, Johnson County has created the first county-level local foods and planning specialist position. I'll talk with Shanti Sells about her plans for her work. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, local foods and urban gardening. Later in the hour, I'll talk with the new local foods and planning specialist in Johnson County. But first, we'll learn what we can from an urban gardening project in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Tim McCullough is a project manager for Milwaukee's Homegrown Initiative. He is visiting Iowa this week. He'll be speaking tomorrow at 7 p.m. at Phillips Hall on the University of Iowa campus and leading a sustainability teach-in on Friday at the Iowa City Public Library. He is with me on the line now. Hello, Tim.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And first of all, give us an idea of what Milwaukee's Homegrown Initiative is all about.
Homegrown was started about 2 years ago, and it was one of Mayor Tom Barrett's responses to the foreclosure crisis in Milwaukee. And what we're trying to do is take the city-owned vacant lots, of which there are a couple thousand, and turn those from a liability into an asset for that neighborhood. And it could be a community garden, it could be a pocket park, it could be an orchard. But how can we really transform these vacant spaces we have in our more challenged neighborhoods in the city of Milwaukee and really create them, create a neighborhood good?
How long has this been going on?
We started in late 2013. And that was after Homegrown was submitted as an entry into what was called the Bloomberg Mayor's Challenge, which was actually a nationwide contest among cities where Bloomberg Philanthropies essentially asked all big cities in the U.S. to give us your best idea, and the winning idea will get $5 million. And we submitted Homegrown as a proposal to there. And out of 305 cities, we ended up coming in sixth. So we realized we had a good idea, and Mayor Barrett said, let's go with it. We didn't win the $5 million, but let's go forward and start transforming vacant lots in our neighborhoods.
And this was really a response to the foreclosure crisis in some ways, right?
Yes. We have tried to think outside the box on what we can do with foreclosed homes that are really in clusters in the city of Milwaukee, as well as the vacant lots that are in the same neighborhoods. And in the city of Milwaukee, it's somewhat unique. If there's a boarded-up house, it ends up being owned by the city of Milwaukee. So it's a city issue, not a bank issue per se. So we end up owning the homes, and we've really tried to think in creative, imaginative ways of how we can use these vacant lots and these potentially these vacant houses to really kind of help propel an already very successful local food economy in Milwaukee.
Well, and let's talk about that already successful local food economy, because I know that there was already quite a strong urban farming movement underway when this program got started. Can you describe that for me?
Yes. One thing we wanted to do with the Homegrown Initiative was build on a local strength. And Milwaukee is the home of many really urban food, community food organizations. Probably the most well-known is Growing Power, which has gone national and international. But there were really 20 or 30 groups in Milwaukee, nonprofits or private, doing serious work growing food indoors, outdoors, educational programs, farmer training programs, and we wanted to build on that strength and a somewhat unique strength we have in Milwaukee regarding urban agriculture and local food. And Will Allen, who started Growing Power many years ago, now travels the world talking about the good food movement, as he calls it. And so he's got the credibility when he says that Milwaukee is the urban ag capital of the United States.
Now, with the homegrown initiative, what have you been able to accomplish that you couldn't accomplish in another way?
I think we've been able to do two or three major things. And the first thing we did, which is really the most important kind of base layer for any city that is going to adopt greater urban agriculture, is in spring of 2014, we did a major rewrite of our city ordinances that really freed up urban agriculture from some of the restrictions it had had under the more traditional city ordinances, such that we're really able to take urban agriculture to the next level and not have the city handcuff operations. For example, we legalized compost farms and hoop houses and commercial farms, which weren't really a category in the city codes before, and promoted stormwater management and water collection, rainwater collection on a lot of these vacant lots and community gardens, really in order to free up the existing wonderful growing economy we had here and really take it to the next level.
Did you have to change a lot of policies in town that were set up to try to prohibit people from doing things like this?
Not really. We've been very friendly about growing local food within the city for a number of years, and we had a lot of things that we just allowed by really kind of a pilot exemption to the code. So we've been very friendly about it, and the city's been leasing out land for a number of years to community gardens. So it really wasn't. We really just needed to kind of get into what I call the urban agriculture infrastructure, being able to allow sheds and rainwater harvesting, et cetera. One of the unique things about Milwaukee is, and I may be off a little bit on the exact percentage, but within the city of Milwaukee, it is zoned, 85% of the city is zoned for agriculture, which is a great starting point.
Now, when you, let's take a vacant lot in one neighborhood where maybe there's been a lot of blight and maybe there are a lot of problems in that neighborhood, you take one vacant lot and turn it into a green space, an orchard or a garden or a park. What changes do you see?
One of the wonderful things we like about that question is there are really multiple benefits that people may or may not notice when we do a vacant lot transformation, say into a pocket park. And there's been an amount of research behind the fact that when you create a new green space in a neighborhood, one of the first things that happens is surrounding property values will start to rise. And that's been documented in a number of cities where housing surrounding a green space may increase from 3% to 30% just due to the existence of that green space. What we've also found is that crime tends to stabilize and drop. And one of the main things we're trying to do with these vacant lot transformations is create a safe, healthy green space where neighbors can gather. And we know that when you know the person down at the end of the block better than you did a year ago, you care more about that person and you're watching out for that person. And our goal has really been to, as we call it, get grandma out of the house and back onto the porch, because a lot of the property owners in these neighborhoods are our elders, and they are the eyes and ears of the community. And to be able to get folks to get be able to gather, grow food, have some physical activity. Those are the types of outcomes that we're really looking for. And in addition, if we're able to transfer a city-owned vacant lot into private hands, and then we're actually increasing our city real estate taxes and dropping our city operating costs.
How many paid employees do you have?
We have had two since we started.
And how many volunteers are involved in the program?
Well, we tend to do everything we do is a public-private partnership. So we have volunteers coming to us from, say, a nonprofit sponsor for a site, neighborhood groups that we partner with, nonprofits that are working in urban food, and really it's the volunteers that are coming to us, not directly to the city per se, but into through our neighborhood partners.
All right, so you have a relationship with a nonprofit, and they would manage the volunteers.
Yeah, we've done a number of public-private partnerships, which is really how it's really core to our model, and I think it's been a core to our success, is the city working with neighborhood groups, with nonprofits, with foundations, with private businesses, sometimes all at the same time, to be able to really transform space successfully.
Now, I know you have a number of orchard parks that have fruit trees. They also have a gathering space. You've started five different community gardens. What happens to the food that's grown in these gardens or in these orchards?
Well, yes, we've done 27 sites to date, and it's really all part of Milwaukee being an eco city. We're actually very proud of what we do here, and I think we do more than a lot of folks in the nation understand we do in terms of how green we are. And what happens to the food, our orchards are really set up such that they're designed for as free public food. So our goal is as the trees mature and we get fruit production from them that, you know, a mom walking their kids to a neighborhood school could actually walk through one of our pocket parks or one of our orchards and grab a couple apples, or we can go there on a Saturday afternoon and have a class on how to take care of trees. But generally, in almost all cases, the food production is available to the public.
I'm talking with Tim McCullough. He's a project manager for Milwaukee's Homegrown Initiative. He's visiting Iowa this week. He'll be speaking tomorrow at 7 p.m. at Phillips Hall on the University of Iowa campus. He'll also be leading a sustainability teach-in on Friday at the Iowa City Public Library. Coming up in a moment, we're going to talk about one of the urban garden projects going on in Iowa right now. We'd also love to hear about projects in your community and your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about urban gardening and local foods. Later this hour, Johnson County's created the first county-level local foods and planning specialist position. I will talk with the woman who got that job in just a few minutes. And also, in a moment, we'll talk about a unique garden in Waverly, Iowa. With me right now is Tim McCullough. He's project manager for Milwaukee's Homegrown Initiative. He will be in Iowa this week. He's speaking tomorrow at 7 p.m. at Phillips Hall on the University of Iowa campus. He's also leading a sustainability teach-in on Friday at the Iowa City Public Library. And Tim, learning about your program in Milwaukee is fascinating, but I'm thinking about cities in Iowa. For the most part, yes, we have some big cities. We do have some neighborhoods with vacant lots where something like this could be really exciting. We also have a lot of smaller cities and towns in Iowa. What do you think Iowans can learn about urban gardening from Milwaukee, and what do you think it might be able to do here?
I think, yes, I think there are lessons learned for communities both small and large. And one of my first recommendations is really for an organization or a neighborhood that wants to start a project like this, is really talk to your council people, talk to your mayor, find out what the rules are, and approach the project. Yes, we would definitely want to grow food on this space, but also keep in mind kind of the impact on the neighbors. Most people love the concept of urban agriculture, but a lot of folks just want to make sure it's also attractive and fits into the neighborhood. Another point I'd make is checking what your local rules are. In Milwaukee, we actually grow all our food above ground, and so we use fresh soil primarily in raised bed gardenings. And so we think fresh soil is important here due to historic industrial pollution. And there are potentials for grants out there, possibly from your local government, possibly from national groups. And just give it a try and make recommend that you have a good group of dedicated folks who will take care of the site 12 months of the year and have fun with it. It's wonderful to grow your own food, and you get great exercise. And we think there also creates the potential for wonderful gathering spaces for neighborhood parties and cookouts, et cetera.
Well, Tim, stay with us. I want to bring into the conversation now somebody who's been very involved in a kind of a surprising urban garden in Iowa. One of these projects is in Waverly, Iowa. It's the Waverly Sharing Garden. Of course, Waverly, not a very big town. It was started in 2011 on flood-damaged lots donated by the city of Waverly. And Ron Lenth is with us, ISU Extension Coordinator for Bremer County. Hello, Ron.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
You bet. Pleasure.
And I think when a lot of people think urban gardens, they might think about towns bigger than Waverly. Tell me how this garden came about.
Well, it really got created as a result of the 2008 floods here we had in Waverly that did a lot of damage along the Cedar River, as it did damage in a lot of other communities. About a year or two later, Reverend Mark Anderson, who's the assistant to the bishop here in Waverly, was for the Lutheran Church, was at a meeting in Detroit, and had seen a community garden out there. And on his return, he visited with some local folks and said, this might be something we could utilize, all these flood-damaged lots that we had in the community. About 100 of them, plus or minus two or three, were totally taken out as far as the homes, and now FEMA had purchased those. So the city was faced with a lot of lots. And that's a lot of extra work and care. And so they were trying to look at options to make this a little bit better quality of life and make use of all these lots for a productive purpose.
So how did the idea of the garden come about?
Well, that's what Reverend Anderson mentioned. And then a group of us got together in January 2011, folks from the city, several church groups, our master gardeners group here, myself, and several private individuals got together and said, this is something that might work. And so we tried to put our mind at work to see which of these lots might qualify. So as a result, the city donated four lots to us on 2nd Street Southwest. And the first year, we were lucky to get enough funding to at least get the trees cleared out and some water put in. And late May, we got most of the seeds in the ground, so we were able to get our first year in, and that first year we actually had production, and most of that food went to the local church meal sites. The Waverly folks are real progressive about providing several nights meals for folks that are in need or a fresh food, and so that food that first year went into those church meal sites.
And who does the gardening work at the Waverly Sharing Garden?
Okay, there's several of us that basically get involved with it, myself and several volunteers. We have a work session on Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 and Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. And so different groups or individuals are welcome to come in to help out. And like most projects, it comes down to a handful that sort of bond with the program and are in there from the start from planting to weeding to harvesting and putting the garden to bed at the end of the year. So that's how it works with our system here.
How much food do you produce out of the sharing garden? Do you know?
And what we do in the summertime, we actually hire a summer intern from Wartburg or one of the surrounding communities. And on our harvesting times, we have a scale there and we weigh all the production. Most years, let's see, last year we had a little over 3,700 pounds. 2014, about 5,300. So somewhere between 3,500 and 5,000 pounds.
Wow.
About half of that goes to the church meal sites and the other half to the Northeast Iowa Food Bank. So they're tickled pink to get fresh vegetables.
As time has gone on, are you finding it more difficult to find volunteers who want to be involved?
Well, a lot of it has to do, a lot of it has to do with asking, but we try to visit with community groups, and as people see the need, and that's how they come about. So sometimes people show up unannounced, and that's fine. We have some groups that volunteer maybe one or two times of the year. Luckily, there's a kind of a core of groups that work, and then whatever volunteers come in make a difference.
I'm talking with Ron Lenth, ISU Extension Coordinator for Bremer County. He's involved with the Waverly Sharing Garden. Also with me, Tim McCullough, who is Project Manager for Milwaukee's Homegrown Initiative. He's visiting Iowa this week to share his experiences. We'd love to hear from you as well. Is there a community garden, an urban garden in your town that you've been involved in? Is there a project that you're hoping to get started? Share it with us, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Ron, I'm curious, how do you feel having this land in production has changed the town of Waverly?
Well, it's given a real positive effect from that flood damage there. It saved the city a lot of extra effort, and it gives a real positive image for what we're trying to do for both needy folks and those that need better nourishment. That's why we've put in 51 raised beds over those building lots that we took over. It helps rally the community. We've got signs around it, and folks ask about it. And that's when they see people being getting extra nourishment and food from land that would be going to waste. It helps to project a real positive image for the community and appreciated by everybody.
Do you feel like this is something that will continue into the future?
Oh, yeah, exactly. I got a whole handful of garden catalogs in front of us. We basically have to do this. It's a self-funding project. All the costs that we bear have to go through grants or in-kind donations, and folks have been real good about that. So this is a long-term one. This will be here for many years.
What happened to those other lots that were not part of the garden?
Well, some of those were, there's another lot for private individuals that was opened up for gardening also over by Wartburg. A lot of the other ones are being mowed. 3 years ago, the city was kind enough to see what we've been doing there and donated another lot south of our current garden for us to put an orchard in. Actually, we're sharing that block with the city. They've got a tree nursery there to replace trees as they're lost. And then we've got about, right now, 45 apple trees from 7 varieties, and we'll be putting 5 more in this spring. So should be getting our first apples this year. So there's another plus out of it also.
That's exciting. Well, Tim, I want to ask you, I'm thinking about turning this open space, this green space, into a garden in Waverly. Obviously, it's been an exciting project for the community. In your approach, I mentioned earlier that you have created some orchards, you've created some pocket parks, you've created some gardens. How do you assess the site and then decide what would be the most beneficial in the neighborhood that you're looking at?
Good question. First of all, Ron, it's truly a wonderful project. Kudos on that. It's very, very impressive. But to your question is, we're looking at lots. What we've actually done is kind of combed through neighborhoods and looked for the best lots and made sure that they were available for one of the homegrown projects. And then water access is very important. Most of these vacant lots do not have a traditional water tap on them. So, but we are blessed with being able to tap city water hydrants to water over the course of the growing season. So we're looking at lots with really good sunlight, with access to water, with interested neighbors living very close to the site, having the neighborhood group being actively involved in that neighborhood. And those are really some of the main criteria that we have in terms of trying to select which sites we use for our projects.
Of course, putting in a garden, that does require a lot of work and a lot of upkeep over time. I could see in some places where you'd say, you know, a park is going to bring a lot more to this community.
Well, we've created some very special parks. And what we're especially proud of is this is really a ground-up process where we've used University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee's architecture school grad students who have an organization called Community Design Solutions. And before we ever touch a site, we are at the Community Design Solutions students are putting on neighborhood workshops, and we're getting out maps of the site, and we're asking residents, what do you want at this site? And some folks will say, you know, I want a community garden, or I want a park, or I want this particular feature at a park. And I think I'm especially proud of that ground-up level of community and resident engagement when we're designing our sites. And also the fact that all the sites we've created to date have been built. Our motto is by the neighborhood, for the neighborhood. They've all been built by residents that have been hired by nonprofits that actually have social enterprise landscaping companies. So the parks are designed by residents, and they're really built by residents as well.
Are there any projects that have run into problems as they've been designed and become part of the neighborhood?
Actually, one thing I'm proud of so far with the parks that we have done, and some are very new, a number were created just this fall, is we have not really had any major issues so far and in terms of vandalism or crime. And so, actually, I can't really say we've really run into any problems so far, and maybe that's because of the strength of the collaborations that we're forming within the city.
I want to go to the phones now. We have Todd Pritchard on the line from Charles City, a state legislator. Hello, Todd.
Morning.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
I was just listening to the show, and I love this idea. You know, we're talking a lot in the legislature about community-sourced agriculture, kind of trying to find ways to develop the markets for this community-sourced agriculture and locally grown produce, and working on some legislation now to work with the ISU Extension to bring, you know, to make it easier for producers of local foods to bring those products to market. And I'd love to hear this type of story because I think it's a really good direction for us to go for a lot of reasons. So,
do you feel like is there quite a bit of legislative push to make policy a little more friendly to agriculture of this kind, Todd?
Yeah. What a small group of us are working on is we're working on a bill right now that kind of aims to open up markets, make it easier for producers to get this food to market. And so what the extension has done in Iowa is they have CSAs or community-sourced agriculture, and they're networks that are, you know, they're kind of providing pipelines to schools and, you know, farmers markets and things like that. So it's kind of acting like a clearinghouse for these producers. And so it's not only, you know, like public gardens like Waverly or things like that, but also people who, you know, are in this for commercial reasons and trying to make money for themselves as farmers. So.
Right. And we'll talk more about local foods and policy in just a moment. But Todd Pritchard, thank you so much for joining us.
No, thanks for this discussion.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And we have just a moment left. Tim, as I mentioned, you'll be speaking tomorrow on the University of Iowa campus and doing a teach-in on Friday at the Iowa City Public Library. What are you hoping to share with people in Iowa?
Well, I think urban food is something that's really here to stay, and I think Milwaukee has been on the vanguard of that. Mayor Barrett's efforts are our efforts to consider ourselves an eco-city. I think there are some lessons learned that hopefully that we can pass along to the faculty and the students there on how to successfully transform vacant lot spaces and do it in a real sustainable fashion.
Well, Tim, thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Yep. Tim McCullo, project manager for Milwaukee's Homegrown Initiative. He's speaking tomorrow at 7 p.m. at Phillips Hall on the University of Iowa campus and leading a sustainability teach-in on Friday at the Iowa City Public Library. Ron Lent, thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate it. And folks are always welcome to come to Waverly and see what we got going.
All right. It's probably about time to start seeds almost.
Well, we're looking at garden catalogs already.
All right, Ron. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Ron Lenth, ISU Extension Coordinator for Bremer County and very involved in the Waverly Sharing Garden. Coming up in just a moment, we will meet the new local foods and planning specialist for Johnson County. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We've been talking about urban gardening so far this hour. We're going to focus now mostly on local foods, although you are welcome to join in our conversation on urban gardening or local foods at 866-780-9100. Johnson County has created a new position, a county-level local foods and planning specialist position. And Shanti Sells is the woman who got the job and is now working to bridge the gap between eaters and food producers in Johnson County. And she is with me now. Hello, Shanti.
Hi, Charity. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here today. And can you tell me what the inspiration was for forming this position in Johnson County?
Yeah, so my understanding is the supervisors have been aware for a very long time that there is a lot of local food activity happening in our county. We have an incredible market here. It's one of kind of the centers in Iowa for local food, a lot of demand. But there has been some disconnect between producers and buyers and the different outlets that we can supply local food to. And so they really found that creating a regional, countywide position that could help connect all the different sectors of the food system, full-time focus, on really getting the different aspects of our food system working together to create more of an inclusive and intact local food system was necessary. And this is the first position of its type on a county level in our state, so it's a really important position. So.
Absolutely. Well, and being the first position of its kind on a county level and creating it really from the ground up, who do you look to model your position on? I mean, I'm sure that you are very involved in figuring out what it is that you do.
Yes. Well, what is so incredible is there are amazing resources already happening in this community. So many of my colleagues are my inspiration. They're folks who have been doing this work in Iowa City, Johnson County area for a very long time and have been working within different sectors of our food system. And I'm able now through this position to help, like I said, link these different sectors and help support the different aspects of our food system. And so, yeah, my inspiration is our local farmers. It's our local retailers who utilize local food. It's our, you know, business people and our legislators and our community members who prioritize local and regional food in their eating. It's our eaters, definitely.
Now, recently on this program, we had a conversation about ideas about national food policy, and we talked about that term, food system, because it's a we call it a food system, although it's not exactly been systematically put together. It's something that has just developed as, you know, there's supply and there's demand. So at the county level, have you had to take a look at agricultural policy on the county level and say, you know, are we getting in our own way here? What do we need to look at as far as making changes and facilitating a food system?
Absolutely. And yeah, there are definitely some ordinances that are limiting for local food producers. We have, you know, we are a very urban county, and so a lot of our local ordinances respond to that. We are very committed to keeping agricultural spaces intact. Johnson County, I don't know the exact percentage, but is at least 80% agricultural and open space oriented, which you know, based on the demand for housing in our county, could look very different if we didn't have these types of ordinances. But it can be limiting to find space for food production within our county. And one of the situations we're really trying to work on is recognizing that there's huge demand here, but limited production, and to create more opportunities for small producers to find their foot in Johnson County and have access to land. Because our market is here, and a lot of our folks are driving from about an hour away to bring food into Johnson County. And so we really want to create more of that in local stream where we're able to link the producer and the demand much more closely. So
now you've been in this position about 4 months.
Yes.
Now,
yeah.
Right. So what has the process been like for you so far as you are trying to get to know the different people who are players in the Johnson County food system and figuring out where you want to place your resources?
Yeah, I mean, I've met with so many incredible people since I've started this position. And, you know, and one of coming into this position for me personally, one of my biggest issues I'd like to focus on is the access piece, and recognizing that we do have a very vibrant demand in this county, but there's still a very large percentage of people that aren't engaged in the local food movement in a meaningful way. And we're all eaters. We all have a role in our food system. And I've been really inspired by the opportunities that are presenting themselves to help link more of our community to the local food system, more access-oriented points, and really looking at how we can broaden our system to allow for more institutional food purchasing, you know, like what your previous caller was talking about, how really create opportunities for growers to get into larger institutions, larger outlets, where the direct-to-consumer model is really strong, but it's limiting. It only engages a certain percentage of our population. And so with the understanding that everyone in our community eats, how do we make sure that they have access to the same incredible food that many of us do.
So when you're talking about institutions, you're talking about hospitals, or what kind of institutions?
Hospitals, university. We have an incredible resource here with the University of Iowa. The school, the farm to school movement here has grown incredibly, and there's still, you know, so much more room to get local food into our schools. Pretty much anywhere where people congregate and eat together. I also consider, you know, restaurants, retail outlets to be that. And we do have Hy-Vee, New Pioneer Co-op, other local retail outlets are really committed to local foods, but there's still room to grow that incredibly so.
Now, at this point, in Johnson County and probably in a number of communities around the state, the demand for local foods outpaces production for local foods in many ways. And so, of course, people are paying a premium for food that's grown locally. Is that a challenge as you're trying to get more local food into institutions where, of course, the budgets are limited as far as what we're going to be able to spend on what we serve in the cafeteria?
Absolutely. And that brings us back to the need to be able to create more opportunities for local producers to scale up their operation. And a model that is very successful that is looking at being developed here in our area is more of the food hub model. So it's an actual aggregation point for local foods for that very reason. So producers, instead of having to be their, you know, market to each individual institution on their own, are able to aggregate their products at a centralized point. And then that system helps larger institutions purchase food on the level that they need. And, you know, buying in bulk, the price point can be less. It still is, I think, one of the education realities that we need to work on is the real cost of food. And, you know, obviously institutions aren't able to fudge their budgets enough to buy really expensive food, but we can look at where the real cost of food is and how we can support local food purchasing within larger institutions. Absolutely.
I'm talking to Shanti Sells. She is the local foods and planning specialist for Johnson County. This is the first county level position like this in the state of Iowa. I'm curious, with Johnson County, as in many counties in Iowa, of course, we have the more urban areas, and then we have the rural areas. And of course, in those rural areas, we have many different kinds of farmers, and they all have their own interests to consider. Have you heard from any farmers engaged in conventional agriculture who are concerned about having a position like yours at the local level? Is this threatening to anybody?
As of now, I have not heard any threats or any interest, not threats, but
right.
Anyone feeling threatened by this position. I definitely think it's important for us to be engaging all farmers in this discussion. And this conversation can be kind of pointed at food producers and, you know, vegetable fruit producers. But we produce a lot of food in this state. And I think that There are more possibly farmers, large landowners who would be interested in engaging in a more localized food system if we could, if we found the way to engage them. So, yeah, I think that is going to be one of my roles, is to help create a larger conversation around local food. Absolutely.
Now, we were talking about trying to get more local foods into institutional settings like schools, hospitals, the university, et cetera. How about trying to make it accessible to people who maybe can't afford to pay those premium prices at the farmers market but would like to have fresh greens, that kind of thing? Is that part of your...
Absolutely. And that's actually, you know, in the 4 months that I have been in this position, there has been incredible work being done on that level, which has really, you know, shown me that so much was being done before I started, and there's so much more that can be done. But the Iowa City Farmers Market just officially institutionalized centralized EBT. And so now any person who is on food stamps or takes WIC, or WIC and food stamps, is able to come to the farmers market, swipe their card in a centralized location, and use it at any outlet at the farmers market. So beforehand, individual vendors were accepting SNAP and EBT cards, and SNAP recipients would have to go and ask that individual vendor if they took food stamps. And there's only 3 vendors of the 130 at the Iowa City Farmers Market that had that system. And so now it's market-wide. It's being managed by the farmers market staff. Anyone can swipe their card. And we'll take debit and EBT cards as well. But it's really, I mean, it creates this very open platform for anyone who has food resources, whatever your food resources are, to shop the Iowa City Farmers Market. And, you know, we're using models from other parts of the country that really show that when the food economy is staying within the community, that even though maybe the individual prices might be a little higher, it balances out, and that consumers are able to prioritize local food without having huge burden on their food resources. So
what are you doing to get the word out about that? I can imagine a lot of people will be excited about that.
Yeah. Well, we just announced it on Monday, and we have a marketing campaign that we're going to launch. Just make sure that it's known within all parts of our community, because a lot of people currently don't realize that the Iowa City Farmers Market will be accepting EBT. And word of mouth, this is going to help a lot too. But we really encourage all eaters in our community to shop the farmers markets in a centralized location. It's a great community spot. So
now, I do know of a few community gardens or public gardens in Iowa City and in Johnson County. Of course, there are a few school gardens. There's a garden on the pedestrian mall. Do you have gardening projects in mind as part of this position?
Well, I mean, one of the aspects that really brings this position into the conversation we're having today is an incredible resource we have as a county, which is the Johnson County Poor Farm. And it's 160 acres within city limits, but it's county-owned property.
Okay, and define this for me. I mean, it's obviously not an operating poor farm, but for people who aren't familiar with that term, what was this land?
So all counties in Iowa historically had a poor farm, and it was a place where the county felt responsible for poor people in their community, and they would send people to these farms. It was a working farm, and it would offer housing and room and board for working on the farm. And so most of them are no longer in operation, and there's only 2 really left in the state that has a historic relevance, that the buildings are still standing, and ours is one of them. And we've had this land, and we've been leasing it to agriculture since the farm officially kind of shut down in 1960. But it's been under production since then. But the supervisors have acknowledged that we have this incredible resource. It's county land within city limits, accessible by bus. It's an amazing community resource. And we're working on future planning as to how we can create infrastructure at the poor farm to allow for more community engagement. And agriculture is one of those visions.
That's a lot of land.
It's a lot of land. It's an incredible resource. And we are currently working with a local organization, Grow Johnson County. It's a new organization. They're a pilot on site. They're leasing 2 acres from us to grow fruits and vegetables for food pantries in Johnson County. And it's a partnership between Table to Table, the Coralville Food Pantry, and Soil Mates here in Johnson County.
All right. And then the rest of the land is continued to be leased by farmers who are...
Currently is being leased for row cropping, yes. But we're in the planning process with this land. So
you mentioned that there are only 2 of these farms left with the historic buildings. Do you know, are these commonly owned by counties around the state still, or has this land been sold off in some counties?
Most of the land has been sold off in other counties and been reappropriated for other uses.
Right. So this is really a tremendous opportunity in Johnson County.
Tremendous opportunity. And there, you know, I think a lot of foresight from the supervisors in keeping this land in county hands. And there's, yeah, the possibilities are really endless there. So.
Wow, absolutely. Well, I have this email from Mark in Des Moines, and he brings up an interesting point. He says, I garden in my front yard because it's my only sunny area. We grow enough food to greatly reduce our fresh grocery bill. It usually only takes me about 20 minutes a day to stay on top of things. I often see pedestrians checking out my small plots. I manage the deer and bunnies with motion-triggered sprinklers. So here's somebody who's doing urban gardening in their own yard on a small scale. Of course, a lot of people do that. And there's been a lot of talk about putting gardens in front yards because this is land that, typically is only a monoculture lawn. And there are parts of Johnson County where I see a lot of front yard gardens. There are parts of Johnson County where I don't see any. Is this part of something that, you're thinking about as well? Zoning ordinance and, community rules or neighborhood rules and making it easier for people to put in gardens if they want to?
Absolutely. And my understanding is Iowa City already has a lot of really strong ordinances that support urban agriculture. As your previous guest said, some of the issues are more around aesthetics and, you know, making sure your neighbors support what you're doing. If you're going to have a garden, they'd like to be aesthetically pleasing, you know, and there are setback regulations. But currently in Iowa City, you can have bees, you can have chickens, you can garden in your front yard, you can have hoop houses if you'd like, as long as they're, you know, adhere to setbacks. On more of a county level, we're really working to create more land opportunities for small farmers. And one specifically that's really exciting is we have just created a rural conservation ordinance, a rural conservation subdivision. And so certain subdivisions are required to be at least 50% conservation, and that does include food production. So there's incredible opportunities there for, you know, these small footprint subdivisions to incorporate food production into their homes. And I'm excited to see where that goes. It's a new ordinance. So
as you're looking at spring, you've had a few months to get things figured out. Are you continuing to collect ideas from people in Johnson County, or do you feel like you have enough on your plate to move forward with that maybe no more new ideas at this point?
Always new ideas. And actually, you bring up a really good point, is that tomorrow we're competing with the U of I presentation, but we're holding our third annual Local Food Policy Council Community Forum at the Johnson County Fairgrounds. It's from 5 to 8:30 p.m. And our topic of discussion is our local food system and how each person in our community can participate, with acknowledging that every single person in our community is a part of our food system. It's at Montgomery Hall at the Johnson County Fairgrounds. It's a free event. We'll have food provided by local restaurants and an opportunity for all community members to engage. So we want the community involvement on every level of this process, and everyone has a voice in this. So call me, email me personally, or come to our forum tomorrow.
And at this point, what are you most excited about?
I am really excited about broadening the access piece and engaging more of our community members in local food. There's so much, as with the gardening projects we've talked about, there's so much agency that comes from being connected to your food and just the possibilities that people have in developing more healthy lifestyles and having more of a connection to the food they eat that comes directly from being engaged at where it comes from or growing it themselves. And I see so much potential in our community to develop these projects, and I'm excited to see where they go.
Well, and hopefully you'll come back and talk to us about it as your position develops and as these projects develop.
Thank you. I will. Yeah.
Shanti Sells is the first county-level local foods and planning specialist in the state of Iowa. She works for Johnson County. Talk of Iowa is produced by Lindsay Moon, Dennis Reese, Claire Roth, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can get in touch with us anytime. We'd love to hear your thoughts about things you've heard on the show, your suggestions for things you'd like to hear on the show in the future. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And you can also tweet us at IPR Talk. You can follow us on Facebook as well. I'm Charity Nevy. This is Talk of Iowa.